McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
This is a little bit diplomatic.
News. Can you design?
Could I see you for a second?
We're gonna cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorial's in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
You are listening to Unfit to Print, a McGill Daily and CKUT News collaboration. I'm Alice DeTrue. Unfit to Print is a student-produced bi-weekly show that brings you the latest in McGill and Montreal news. On today's program, you'll hear a feature conversation with Professor Samia Batmeh. Dr. Batmeh is a visiting Palestinian professor from Birzeit University who is currently teaching in the Islamic Studies Department at McGill. She is also the coordinator for the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic Divestment and Cultural Boycott of Israel. She spoke last night at McGill University about the boycott's divestment and sanctions movement. But first, headlines. Here are some of the headlines of McGill News over the past 2 weeks. Real estate company Ivanhoe Cambridge halted the construction of an office complex in downtown Montreal on February 15th due to fears that developers were potentially building on the disputed location of the St. Lawrence Iroquoian village of Hochelaga. Construction paused after a series of complaints to archaeologists and the municipal and provincial governments from freelance photographer Robert Galbraith. The chief and council of the Algonquins of Barrier Lake have filed a lawsuit against the government and their current and previous third-party managing companies as part of their ongoing struggle against the Canadian government. The lawsuit was filed on January 30th for $30 million in damages and claims that the government and managers have harmed the community by mismanaging and withholding funds that were to be used for the benefit of the community and its members. The provincial government has increased funding to universities for services for students with disabilities, but the modalities of its allocations have not yet been set. Following reports in Le Devoir last month that funding allocated to UQAM by the government for services for students with disabilities would be redirected to alleviate the effects of budget cuts, McGill Provost Anthony Massey was questioned about McGill's planned use of those funds. He said that no expenditure reports were as of yet available. The Office for Students with Disabilities is confident that this new investment will bring better services for students, but noted that the office will be 15% short on its budget unless a new allocation process is confirmed. On February 20th, the Student Society of McGill University's Judicial Board released a set of recommendations regarding rules of procedure at General Assemblies, which many had found confusing at the Fall Assembly. The board ruled that council is required to adopt and publicize simplified standing rules for the General Assembly, which it has in fact done, as its last meeting on February 12th. The Fall General Assembly also saw a controversial use of a motion to postpone indefinitely, which only requires a simple majority. The Judicial Board ruled that changing the threshold to 2/3 was not under the purview of council. Discussion at the February 18th meeting of the McGill Senate drew the ire of members of the Student Caucus when it touched on a proposed update of the university's mission statement. Several faculty senators spoke against the inclusion of academic responsibility alongside academic freedom in the university's statement of principles, which the students found disappointing. Students were similarly disappointed with the administration's lack of commitment to reforming university policies to promote student mental health, as recommended by the university's mental health working group last year. On January 1st, new federal rules came into effect for international students applying for permanent residency. Previously, the application system gave an automatic leg up to international students with Canadian work experience. Under the new regulations, international students will now be put in a general pool with other immigrants and will be scored according to a comprehensive ranking system. These changes will make it more difficult for some international students to secure permanent residency. For more in-depth coverage of these stories or other news articles, go to our website at mcgilldaily.com or pick up a print copy of our paper on stands now. This is Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Last night, the Student Society of McGill, along with the group McGill Students in Solidarity with Palestinian Human Rights, hosted a panel discussion on apartheid states and boycotts, divestments, and sanctions movements. One of the panelists was Professor Boutmeh, a visiting Palestinian professor from Birzeit University. The Daily's Molly Korab sat down with Professor Boutmeh this morning.
I'm joined in studio today by Professor Samia Boutmeh. Professor Boutmeh is a visiting Palestinian professor from Birzeit University in the West Bank. She is also the coordinator for the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel, PACB. Last night, she took part in a panel discussion on boycott, divestment, and sanctions, also known as BDS. The panel was hosted by SMU and McGill students in solidarity with Palestinian human rights. Professor Boutmeh, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for hosting me.
If we could begin by talking about last night's event, could you describe it for us?
Last night's event was focused around the issue of apartheid. So there were three panelists, and the discussion was around the analogies between the apartheid system in South Africa and the apartheid regime currently run by Israel in Palestine. There were discussions of what apartheid actually means, what does it stand for, and then how it actually functioned in South Africa, and how Israeli apartheid manifests itself in Palestine. And then we moved on to discuss Palestinian struggle against Israel's colonization and apartheid, and the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement was highlighted. What does it stand for? What's its objectives? How it aims to achieve these objectives? And then the role of the solidarity movement here locally, on campus, but in the broader sense within Canada.
For those who don't know, can you explain what BDS is and why it's effective?
BDS is a movement that the Palestinians have initiated in 2005. So it's been around for 10 years. It's calling on people of conscience around the world, of individuals that uphold human rights, and ethics to stand in solidarity with Palestinians to attain justice and freedom for the Palestinians within the framework of international law. And the movement, in a way, has three main objectives: to end the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, the occupied Palestinian territories, and equality for Palestinians living inside Israel, who live under a system of apartheid, and then implementation of international law and UN resolutions with regards to Palestinian refugees. So the movement deals with three segments of Palestinian society and aims at ending colonialism and apartheid.
Can you talk a little bit about the BDS movement within Palestine itself?
The movement, in a way, uses BDS is not an end by itself. It's a strategy. It's a tool of resistance to pressure Israel. Israel, over the years, the Palestinians have tried different measures to, in a way, bring about peace with the Israelis. One of these has been the peace process, the official peace process, and that has failed dramatically. Didn't just fail, but actually the repercussions for the Palestinians have been grave in terms of loss of life and livelihoods and confiscation of land and resources. And so the Palestinians, through the engagement in a peace process with the Israelis, ended up in a worse off situation. That doesn't mean that peace is bad. That's not the issue. The issue is that the terms upon the terms upon which the peace process was initiated were flawed because they assumed that the that there is a symmetry in the relationship between the colonizer and the colonized. So the Palestinians who are oppressed were brought to the table together with the oppressor under the assumption that both are engaged in a conflict and that both are basically of equal status and level. And we know that is flawed because a colonizer and a colonized are not there is no symmetry in power between the two, as much as there is no symmetry in power between a master slave and a slave. And that's why the peace process has failed. The Palestinians have also engaged over the years, since the 70s actually, with Israeli civil society on trying to bring about peace. And that has been used by Israel abroad to whitewash its crimes. So whoever criticized Israel around the world, Israel used to use the excuse that the Palestinians have engaged or are engaging with the Israelis, and therefore, you know, there is an ongoing process of resolution. And of course, that is also flawed, because at the end of the day, using us as an excuse to justify Israeli crimes is not ethical nor acceptable. And therefore, this movement uses pressure from within Palestine through our boycotts, through our severing of links with Israel, but also calls for solidarity from the rest of the world to pressure Israel to end its atrocities. So all what we're asking is implementation of international law. International law has been endorsed and conceptualized actually by world governments, and therefore if these governments do not stand by their own laws and endorsements, then we have to somehow bring about an end to Israel's impunity and status above the law.
On that note, last night you said, what we want is solidarity, not charity. Can you elaborate on what you meant by this?
This is actually in relation to how the rest of the world, especially governments, have dealt with the Palestinian issue since the colonization of Palestine in 1948. We have been dealt with as if we are a case of charity. So as if a tsunami hit Palestine, rather than a creation of the state of Israel, which led to the dispossession of the Palestinian people, political, economic, and social dispossession. And therefore, we have been provided with aid, food supplements, rations, healthcare, education. And this has been the case since 1950. So the entire world boasts about how much aid they have given the Palestinians and so on. At the same time, there has been no political form of support, in the sense that the essence of the problem is political, and yet the solution is charitable. We are a people of dignity. We are a people of a political issue, and therefore the resolution has to be political. There has been international agreements or agreement around the world that the refugees, Palestinian refugees, have to return, and this is enshrined in international law. Apartheid is a crime, and this is again within international law, and Israel is an occupier of the Palestinian territories. So that's what the Palestinians want. They want political solidarity on to bring about justice in relation to these three issues. We do appreciate food rations, but that is not the problem. Our problem is not charity. Our problem is colonialism.
You mentioned the word apartheid, which is something else that came up last night. There's definitely some confusion and resistance about using the term in regards to Israel. Why do you think it's an appropriate term?
Apartheid is a term that is initiated by the UN. It has been applied to the case of South Africa, but it is not case specific. It's not a South African issue. It's an international law issue that if there is anywhere in the world a case whereby discrimination, whereby segregation, whereby privileging of one group over another exists, then that is defined as apartheid. So within South Africa, apartheid was defined along the lines of privileging the whites over the blacks, and along the lines of segregation in terms of living areas, but also in terms of access to resources. And the third aspect has to do with issues of oppression. Now, if we apply that to Israel, then actually Israel ticks all the boxes. There is a very strong system of apartheid whereby we as Palestinians, we're segregated totally. We cannot move out of our own areas. I mean, I'm here now in Montreal. I have not been able to enter Jerusalem for the past 6 years. And I can see Jerusalem from my house window. I overlook Jerusalem, but I can never enter Jerusalem. I'm not allowed. And the reason for that is because I'm Palestinian. So my ethnicity actually decides on my rights and privileges. Also, it has to do with my access to not just areas and land, but services. I am not allowed to use the airport. I am not allowed to have equal access to water as Israelis. I am not allowed to use certain roads. Even these roads would pass from my own town or village. I cannot use these roads. These roads are certain roads are exclusively reserved for the use of Jewish settlers. So if you're Jewish, you have certain privileges. I'm Palestinian, therefore I do not have these privileges. So the issue of oppression, the number of Palestinian prisoners is in Israeli prisons. Children, there are about 52 children in Israeli prisons. In its last war on Gaza, 2,000 people were killed by Israel. 10,000 people were injured. Confiscation of land, confiscation of resources. All of these are crimes in the sense that they violate international law. And all of that actually classifies Israel as a state of apartheid, whereby Jews are privileged and Palestinians are the underprivileged, as was the case in South Africa, where whites were the privileged party and the blacks were the underprivileged.
You also mentioned the word colonialism. Here in Canada, we're having this conversation on colonized land. And that's something that came up in the panel yesterday as well, that Canadians need to be aware of their colonial heritage. Can you talk about the importance of the BDS movement within a Canadian context?
I mean, it's very important to recognize that there are many injustices around the world. And the First Nations struggle here within Canada is extremely significant. And we identify with this struggle in the sense that we are an Indigenous population resisting colonialism and struggling for justice and freedom. And therefore, we see the links with other Indigenous people around the world, including the First Nations in Canada. It is very important to recognize that colonialism is a process of dispossession of the capacity of people to master their own lives and master their own destiny, in the sense that you lose, you're forced, you're coerced to lose your capacity to decide for yourself. And that includes your own self, your family, your community, your surroundings, your resources, and therefore you cannot live nor plan for your future. And that what the process of dispossession through colonization means. Basically, ending your life while you still exist. And I think the fact that, I mean, engaging in the debate around that is the first step towards rectifying the injustices that have taken place. And therefore, it is important to recognize what has happened to the First Nations here and the process of dispossession and how, in a way, whether the First Nations or the Palestinians or any other group that has undergone an injustice, what they want should be heard and listened to. It's not what we think they should receive or what we think they should get. It is very important to listen to the First Nations. It's very important to listen to the Palestinians. What are their demands? The voice of the oppressed is extremely important in undoing injustices. And standing in solidarity with these demands is a principled solidarity. And in a way, imposing your own views or your own understanding of how these rights should be is actually highly disrespectful. And therefore, recognizing these injustices, listening to the voice of the oppressed, acting upon this voice in solidarity, and working together to end injustices is extremely important. Working together across injustices also is extremely important, in the sense that these struggles have much in common, and we learn from each other and we support each other.
For my last question, I wanted to ask you more specifically about universities within the process of divestment. What role do you think that universities specifically play in divestment campaigns and in resisting colonialism generally?
I think universities play a very important role in the sense that students worldwide over history have been at the forefront of pushing struggles forward and challenging oppression. And therefore, students here in Canada and everywhere around the world have carried forward many struggles. South African struggle was very much not initiated, but supported and popularized within universities. And that, in a way, was a catalyst for the rest of civil society to carry the movement forward. And the same with issues of any form of racism, any form of sexism. All of these movements and all of these struggles have been pushed forward by students and universities. And therefore, we look towards universities around the world, in the North and the South, to stand in solidarity with us. We have called for this solidarity. So you have the Palestinians asking the rest of the world how to support us. And therefore, what we are trying to do is to bring pressure on Israel. So boycotting Israeli goods and services, boycotting Israeli universities, culture that has been used to whitewash Israeli crimes, all of these actually bring about a process of pressure that would knock some sense into Israel and Israelis, that it is not acceptable for colonialism in the 21st century to exist. It's not acceptable to practice apartheid and occupation and to segregate people and to privilege one group over another and still be expected to be welcomed around the world. So students can actually pass motions of divestment, asking their universities to divest from Israeli companies, particularly those dealing with arms, asking their universities to, on ethical grounds, purely ethical grounds, to divest from companies that deal with the occupation. HP, for example, Caterpillar, Volvo, All of these companies are engaged, Motorola, all of these companies are engaged in enforcing occupation through either technology or investments or building of the settlements and so on and so forth. It is very important also to rally academics around supporting Palestinians and Palestinian struggle pushing academics and universities not to engage with Israeli academia, as very much has happened during the South African struggle. South African universities were boycotted. Our boycott is actually not individual. It doesn't target Israeli individuals, it targets institutions. In South Africa, it was actually institutions and individuals, and they were boycotted from everybody nearly around the world. So we are asking for the same form of solidarity. Also in terms of exchanges, student exchanges, these should be boycotted. And as well as issues of goods and services, markets. It is important to isolate Israel, not for the sake of isolation, as was the case in South Africa. It is to bring about pressure so that Israel would realize that it is really not acceptable to continue with its oppressive policies. Once these oppressive policies end, once justice is attained, once everyone in Palestine stands in front of the law as equal, there are no privileges for one group over another, then at that point in time there is no point of boycotts. And therefore, till then, it is important to keep up the pressure, and your solidarity is at every level is extremely important in the struggle against colonialism.
Professor Butme, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
That was an interview with Professor Samia Boutme. You can learn more about the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic Divestment and Cultural Boycott of Israel on their website, pacbi.org. Well, that does it for this edition of Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thank you to Molly for her piece this week, and make sure to tune in 2 Tuesdays from now to hear our next episode, and check out our past stories and podcasts, including culture and fiction pieces, at mcgilldaily.com/podcast.
I'm Bit to Print.